The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
Come on, who's going to name their stadium after Pelé? Goodison Park doing Goodison Park things? The absolute definition of there or thereabouts? The vital components are being perceived to have let your country down? Peter Drury does Gary Weaver. The Pure hasn't been on Gary Neville's soccer box yet, but definitely will one day 11. The State of Football magazine annuals in 2023, and the first trip to Keys and Grey Corner of the year. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 221 of Football Pelés. I'm Adam Pelé and with me on the first adjudication Pelé of 2020 Pelé is Pelé Eccleshare. How's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm really good, thank you. Alongside you on the adjudication Pelé today, it's a 99th appearance on this podcast for David Walker de Nascimento. How are you?
I'm very well.
Yes, we are sticking rigidly and dutifully to Gianni Infantino's directive that things must be named after Pelé. Let's hear exactly what he asked the global football family to do.
We pay tribute to him by asking all the federations now to pay a minute of silence and tribute to Pelé. But we're also going to ask every country in the world to name one of their football stadiums with the name of Pelé.
Charlie Eccleshare, How on earth are the FA going to apply this directive? I mean, how are any country going to do it? How do you choose the stadium? Because it can't be your national stadium. I mean, for countries of a certain vintage, it can't be your national stadium, surely.
No. I mean, could they do ones that have tenuous links to Pelé? I mean, or Brazil, teams that have ironically said it's just like watching Brazil. Oakwell, for instance. I remember when Barnsley were in the Premier League. Could that become the Pelé Stadium?
The Riverside, maybe?
Yeah, could it be, yeah.
How about there's a cut-off date and the first club to build a new stadium after said date has to name it after Pelé?
That seems fair because, you know, market forces and all sorts of economics will sort of override any other kind of skullduggery in terms of scheduling. So if you've got to build a stadium, you will build it and then you will follow that rule. Someone said on Twitter, Dave, that it feels a bit Reading.
Yeah.
Surely one club will try and step up as a classy touch and do this.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, it's just, even the point about him saying there, we ask all the federations to acknowledge it and, you know, at matches and stuff. I saw, of all places, I was watching the guy who does the padded seat, you know, the hospitality stuff on like TikTok, and he goes to all the games and he experiences hospitality. And you obviously don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm sure the listeners will.
No.
This is a bloke on TikTok who basically created an account that enables him to get free hospitality at every sporting occasion in the world now. And he went to Solihull Moors the other day, which is a bit of a step down because he's normally at the top table. And the last shot of his TikTok from his Solihull Moors hospitality experience was them doing a minute's applause for Pelé before their game. And it's just, I don't know, he's obviously the greatest footballer of all time, most iconic and all that stuff. But it just feels like, am I going to be doing a minute's applause to Pelé on Clapham Common this Sunday?
I appreciate your instinctive reaction to this. But Charlie, of all players in the history of football, if there was one player whose tributes were going to drip down to the lowest levels to Sunday League and it still feel relatively sincere, I'd say Pelé's probably that right up there. Because it isn't just about how good he was, it's just what he represents. So I think he is one of a select few footballers I would do a minute silence for at Sunday League and not have my hand on my chest doing it, but feel okay and not like a complete twat.
Yeah, there aren't many, are there? I mean, probably just Pelé and Maradona. We could mourn the end of Cristiano Ronaldo's career in Europe and have a minute's silence.
Could do that. But in the landscape, Charlie, of tenuous links to Pelé, nothing will beat this. This is from Joseph Horton, who sent me a tweet from Ammanford AFC, who play in the lower echelons of the Welsh system. And they tweeted, "Remembering Pelé, from Rice Road to Pelé. Ammanford AFC claims a small part in his legendary history. Former Town defender Alan Jones played for the Los Angeles Aztecs in 1975 and played against Pelé's New York Cosmos, winning 5-1. And they put a little sort of team list underneath it just to prove it, that he was there on the pitch with Pelé in 1975. Not worth it.
I mean, we did have this has felt a bit reminiscent of the Queen dying a few months ago with anyone. The sort of, it has been sort of fascinating watching, yeah, some of the links that people have been coming up with. I mean, I think with the Pelé Stadium, I can't imagine what...
Just loads of middle-aged men and women from the home counties just got on a plane to Santos. I just had to be there. I just had to see him.
Was Keezy there? I think he flew in
Philip
and out.
Schofield
quickly.
Jumping the queue again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was literally people calling it the queue, capitalised as well, which was a stunning kind of continuation of that theme. But let's kick off the adjudication panel for the first time in 2023. Goodison Park in its first home fixture of the year, doing its own real tribute to Pelé, really, in its own way. Here's the fourth Brighton goal going in their 4-1 win at Everton. What a boo this is.
It's over, everybody.
Here's the back pass.
Oh, and that's short from Idrissa Gueye. And a chance to race clear for Pascal Gross. It's an impudent finish. It's four for Brighton. It's an absolute disaster for Everton. A gift of a goal.
Oh, this goal just sums up the difference between the two teams tonight.
Probably more difficult boo to perform, Dave, the post-goal boo, because where do you come in? Because obviously the shock of the goal, the impact of the goal has to subside, and then the kind of resultant boos have to come in. So you can't go early.
No, but I think this one was... It was a goal that, if you haven't seen it, obviously came from a short back pass. The attacker had the freedom of Goodison Park to run through on goal. So everyone could see it coming. It was a chip over the keeper, followed by a hapless defender falling into the back of the net. So it wasn't like a shot out of nowhere where people had to sort of get... They knew... People were gearing up...
Clearing their throats.
For the boos, I think. Yeah, yeah.
I did see that... As I saw these goals going in, I did just think, wow, this is going to make for some... incredible reactions from the angry Everton fans, and the fact that the goal starts as well with a big tackle being won by a Brighton player. So that's kind of that, you know, the Everton stock and trade. At least we want it more than the opposition and all of that. I mean, I just, yeah, that everything about that goal, it looked like it was designed to infuriate, especially with that short back pass as well at the end.
I can't for the life of me remember who tweeted this at me, but I'm trying desperately to find it. But Dave, someone said, is this the most manager about to get sacked goal you could possibly concede, given all the ingredients? It does feel very on the brink.
Definitely, definitely. For all the things I just said, in terms of just all those elements, it was a mistake, forlorn attempt to retrieve the ball, Pickford in no man's land, fans angry, Brighton being...
They missed 50-50 at the start.
Yeah, you know, it's Brighton. There would be some, even though Brighton are obviously a decent team, there'd still be sort of this perception that we can't... It's Brighton. Why are we, you know, how are we losing 4-0 at home to Brighton?
This is Everton Football Club.
It's New Year.
Game. Yeah. Just under the lights.
Under the lights.
Which is where they should be, you know, 100% record, as far as I understand.
Why every team should be 100% record. I did have that thought, that exact same thought. I was like, this feels so end of days. I also, and we may have got into this before, but the commentator there, I think, says that just about sums it up. I've just been noticing it recently. I think that something summing up a half or summing up someone's performance, I think that may be the most used... turn of phrase in football commentary, because you can do it basically every game, because there will be a moment in a bad first half performance, there'll be a misplaced pass. That just about sums it up for me.
Yeah, the scope for using the phrase is so wide as well. It can be a shot, a goal, a misplaced pass, anything, a slip, pretty much anything. Yeah, I agree. Now, we've been at the vanguard Dave, of full-time Goodison booing discourse. I feel like we've really pushed forward this area of study to the point now where you don't really have to look too far for audio of full-time Goodison booing. Here it is from the field, you know, raw audio.
Really concerning nights in an already chastening campaign.
Great bass to that, but perhaps didn't quite get the full visceral nature of the boo. This is from someone's mobile phone footage, just up in the stands at Goodison. Oof. Like a furnace, Charlie.
It's the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, doesn't it?
It is fulfilling. It is a fulfilling sound in a way, Dave. If you're not connected with it, I feel like it's just a real fulfilling footballing sound. It really reminds you of what you love about the game.
I think we can all identify with it, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right, let's move on. There'll be another boo at Goodison for us to enjoy at some point, I'm sure. This is great. Charlie, from Dan Rubin. Currently travelling in Asia, and a few weeks ago, upon seeing a nice sunset, my girlfriend turned to me and said, "Lao doing Lao things." A proud moment, although not sure a country can do country things. What a cultural reach again we're having.
That's amazing. Stop it, Lao. Stop that right now. That is wonderful, yeah.
It was a nice sunset. But yeah, great. Yeah. Not 100% on board with the usage, Dave, but I do appreciate the sentiment. It kind of works.
I think that does work, yeah. If you ask me to sort of envisage a typical scene on holiday in that part of the world, on a sort of island or whatever, I probably would think of about being on a beach with a nice sunset, yeah.
A lot of people messaging us now questioning whether Laos is an island or not, but that's not our issue, not a geography podcast. I'll tell you who was really busy over Christmas, really hitting peak form, was football montage specialist Brian's Gun. This one particularly caught my ears, a real riff on a very popular footballing phrase for us to dissect.
They will be there or thereabouts.
We need to be there or thereabouts.
We're going to be there or thereabouts.
In there or thereabouts.
Well, we're going to be there or thereabouts.
They're going to be there or thereabouts.
I think that they'll be there or thereabouts.
They'll be there or thereabouts.
They're there or thereabouts, which is good news for everybody.
Been there or thereabouts.
They're still there or thereabouts.
They're thereabouts again this time.
They're there or thereabouts.
They're going to be there. Don't worry. They're going to be there.
They'll be there or thereabouts.
There and thereabouts.
There and thereabouts.
We'll be there or thereabouts.
So I believe they would have been there or thereabouts.
We've got to be there or thereabouts. And we are. And I'm convinced we'll be there or thereabouts again.
I'm reassured in a way, Charlie, that Steve Bruce is at the epicentre of the there or thereabouts ongoing phenomenon, because it does feel like a Steve Brucey kind of phrase, a very vague thing. Mm. But can we define it? What does there or thereabouts mean?
Partly because it's Steve Bruce, and I think of him as being quite a... He's talking there often, I think, in a sort of promotion-y context. And I think it helps with that, because you're talking about quite a big area of the table, aren't you? There or thereabouts can basically be top eight-ish.
Yeah.
If you're top eight, you're in the mix for promotion, and I think that can be there or thereabouts.
Is it... To narrow it even further, would there be top two and thereabouts be playoffs?
Exactly. Or even...
I think playoffs would be considered to be there. Especially in the championship context, because like that's your life raft if you're looking to bounce back up again. So I would say there is top six and thereabouts is in the hunt. And we know how congested it can get up there, Dave.
But if you're in the hunt, I mean, at the moment, there's like ridiculous, like 15 teams who are... thereabouts.
Yeah.
But in that clip, a lot of the managers and players in particular were talking about it as if thereabouts would be acceptable. Like would be sort of job done.
Thereabouts. Yeah.
We will be there or thereabouts. Yeah. But if you're saying that thereabouts is outside of the playoffs in this example, thereabouts is not where you want to be. You want to be there. You don't want to be there thereabouts.
But I think if you're thereabouts, there is the scope to be there. So if, you know, often you'll hear it, like, I feel like Fergie or the sentiment would be like, look, we just need to be there or thereabouts at the turn of the year because we'll back ourselves in the second half of the season.
Right.
And so I think for a lot of these teams, it's, look, we just need to be there or thereabouts with, you know, in March and from there we'll have half a chance.
Yeah, 2 points to pick up on here. I would definitely not encourage its use as an end result for the season.
No.
You shouldn't be there or thereabouts at the end of the season when everything has been settled, because thereabouts means nothing then. Secondly, I would say thereabouts basically means, in general, if you want to, you know, have a universal meaning for it, Dave, I think thereabouts means within striking distance of the thing that you want to attain at the business end of the season. So you have a chance of getting it if fortune favours you.
Yeah. I mean, what is the relationship between there or thereabouts to in and around?
Yeah, close. Because I think in and around the promotion places is something you might hear for the same sort of time frame. Look, as long as we're in and around the promotion places by March, when we're getting a lot of players back or when XYZ is going to happen.
I'd say it's roughly analogous. I think it's pretty much the same thing. In and around, yeah, I'd say it's about right. But in and around, of course, Charlie, has a wider usage. We now know people are using it willy-nilly in the rest of life. But would you use there or thereabouts anywhere else in your life? It's a 50-50 thing. I mean, house hunting, maybe that's a sphere you could use it.
Yeah, we're looking at Walthamstow, thereabouts.
But in your head, in your footballing head, that would just mean we're getting the house we wanted or a house that's slightly less good.
Well, yeah, I was thinking in the Lao example that we had before as well.
Yeah.
You know, we're hoping to get as far as Lao, or if not, there or thereabouts. Thailand.
No, it's a vertical thing. It has to be. The more I think about it, it's not a 360-degree thing. In and around is there, and it does its job. Right, let's get this off to a flyer in 2023. It's time for My Sins Corner. It's not going away. We're not giving up on it. I've got my two big hitters here for My Sins Corner. Let's hope Charlie's Wi-Fi holds up. It's over to trusty Popmaster and our old friend. Oh, it's DJ Spoonie. You know the drill.
Contestant number one today, Mike Gleeson. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, how are you?
I am fine and dandy. Now, Mike in front of me says that you're in Warrington.
Yes, for me sins, yes.
Oh, so early!
I had a feeling he might go early there.
It might feel like a waste to you, but let's continue the clip and just see how full my sinsy the rest of it is.
Red.
I'll miss you then, say again.
Whenever someone tells me they're from Liverpool, I have to ask the question, are you blue or red?
I have to answer, I'm a bit of blue.
Ah, okay. Well,
could have done it there.
Mike, we won't let our love of football and our team colours come between us, will we?
Okay.
Mike, what do you do in your spare time? How do you like to enjoy yourself?
Here we go.
I like to laze around, listen to music, play my guitar, watch The Sound of Music.
You like to watch The Sound of Music?
I love it, yeah.
So most people say I like to watch TV or I like to watch films. You particularly like to watch The Sound of Music. How many times have you watched The Sound of Music?
Both. Hundreds. In fact, I'm putting for Mastermind and that's my chosen subject.
Oh, look at that.
Oh.
The first real top heavy for My Sins Corner and you both couldn't hack it.
Oh, so early. He's hit that one really early before the keeper had a chance to set himself.
Oh, that's like, they talk about that, don't they? Ex-players say the chance has come so early in the game. You're a little cold. You're not quite ready for it. That's what happened to us there.
But then the rest of it, a litany of opportunities for him to drop in a For My Sins.
I know. It comes in so many guises, doesn't it, For My Sins? But yeah, Warrington. Hit early for you. Fantastic. But yeah. I won't bemoan your performances in that one. It was a curveball, but one to keep an eye on for future instalments. Now, fairly inevitable scenes on Boxing Day, Charlie, at Brentford versus Spurs. This tweet from Tom Barkley perhaps summed up the kind of to and fro of the football chants at Brentford that day. A section of the Brentford fans sing, "You let your country down," in the direction of Harry Kane. Sparks boos from travelling Spurs supporters who sing, "He's one of our own," and then take aim at Ivan Toney with, "Tony, what's the odds? And you're getting sacked in the morning." What an incredible flow, ebb and flow to that exchange. Like, not mucking around, just getting it all out, all the topical things out in one go.
But the only thing that's missing is something to Toney about not getting picked for the squad. I think that'd be the only thing, a kind of retort to your... You let your country down, you know, you didn't even get the opportunity to let your country down. How you wish you'd have been in that position to take that penalty, Ivan Toney.
You weren't even on the plane. That works. Yeah. It did feel inevitable, Dave, that Harry Kane was going to get the kind of semi-sincere "you let your country down" chant, which I instinctively thought we should relate to a little bit to "you're not fit to wear the shirt," but that's an incredibly sincere chant. This one is never used really seriously because obviously the phrase itself is ridiculous, right?
Yeah. I'm a bit surprised from the Brentford fans though.
really?
I think that's a bit, it's a bit much. I don't know, I just wouldn't...
I know what you mean, it's not very 2022, where yeah. people, people are more supportive.
Mm.
Oh, right, I see. I was interested to know which variable you thought was excessive there, Dave, because I'm interested to know, instinctively, what the you let your country down threshold is. Missing a penalty in a decisive match at a World Cup feels to me, as a student of the chant, rather than anyone who has a vested interest in this, as comfortably within that threshold.
Yeah, but I don't think it's as bad as... It's not Beckham red card against Argentina.
No.
I was thinking that. It's a red card, like Rooney in 2006. It's that sort of...
Mm.
But I'd say it's mid-range. Beckham's is top of the range. Missing a penalty to essentially dump your team out of the World Cup, and it, for him to then be playing against your club... That's all the ingredients anyone would ever need.
I would say yes, but it's I'd say mid range is missing a penalty in a shootout, whereas missing a penalty in the course of the game is a notch down from that.
Is it?
I think so. Yeah.
But missing a penalty in a shootout, you get some points for the bravery for stepping taking
up.
It.
Come on.
Which you don't. You know, you don't get that in the same way if you're just the designated penalty taker, because there was no.
Just a few sort of dissenting voices in the Brentford fans. Oh, leave off. At least he stepped up.
Well, yeah, exactly.
He's the designated taker. If anything, he let his country down more than someone who wouldn't have taken it regularly for their club or a,
yeah,
you know,
no,
on a
I
weekly
think that's
basis.
True. I think that's true. But I remember, and I don't know if this is the first... My first time being conscious of that chant was when England actually didn't qualify for the Euros in 2007. I remember that being sang at all the players who played.
That is brilliant.
In that Croatia game that England lost that cost them the place. Because I think,
during that match?
No. After in the weeks after.
Got it.
I remember towards the back end of 2007, that being sung at, I think it was Gareth Barry. He was the player I remember.
Darren Bent.
Sat on the bench somewhere going, yeah.
But I guess that's the work, because it's like we don't even get a tournament. You know, our summer is going to be tangibly worse because of you and what you...
So the chant there was it at its most literally fair, you would say?
Well, I just think that was the most... That was almost the most vitriolic I've heard it. Because it was like, you've robbed us of the Euros.
Think of the economic
summer.
Impact of what you've done
exactly.
on this country.
Think of the pubs.
No one's going to be able to put up bunting. Oh, dear. So missing a penalty we think is mid-range, depending on context. Getting sent off, a la Beckham 98, is premium.
The worst.
You let your country down, football chant territory. Anything else? Any other possibilities? Perhaps, like Dave, a player kind of refusing to turn up for a tournament or a squad, and so not turning up for England duty. That would be letting their country down, or am I being too literal? They wouldn't care about that, would they?
I mean, I can't even think of an example where that's really happened. I suppose
Chris Sutton ever got that sent, sort of shouted at him in 98.
But maybe the sort of infamous Hong Kong plane ride before Euro 96. Obviously, they went on to completely was never an issue. But if they were completely stunk the place out and went out in the group stage, and it was put down to their boozing.
That is a very good hypothetical. You let
or,
punch down
or what
based
about
on
those
home
players? What about those players like Giggs? Wasn't he accused of sort of picking and choosing his games for Wales? Might a portion of their fan base of, you know, if he
too much of a drip feed effect because they were all sort of fairly innocuous games in isolation.
Yeah. Maybe
you couldn't argue that even as a sum of his parts, he let his country down.
Yeah, yeah. Roy Keane.
Good luck. Can you imagine? But then there wouldn't be enough Irish fans at the game. He would have had to go play over in Ireland for that to happen. So, but can you sing it to a player if it's not your country? I don't think you can.
I don't think you're qualified.
Weird. Yeah, it's not for you to say. It's not your country, mate.
I think one still might. If there'd been... if one of the guys who missed the penalty for France in the shootout played in the Premier League, I can't imagine that you let your country down.
The emphasis changed. Yeah. You let your country down. But the problem is, Dave, people will be singing that and then there'll be people around going, sorry, I'm not up to speed with this. What happens?
But then
they have to explain.
Yeah. But then shouldn't it be you let our country down?
Well, that's what I was thinking there. With the, if you're singing to the other players about their own countries, you let. Oh, I mean, that's just so pious, isn't it?
Different dagger to the heart, isn't it? I think
you
it's,
let
yeah, it's
our
more
country
sort of pinning
down.
It on them. Yeah, that's worse actually. At the same game. Now, there's nothing wrong with this next clip, by the way. This is Matt Holland on co-commentary at Brentford versus Spurs. But listener Scott Burden had some fun with it anyway. Let's hear it.
just try and compare Kane and Son's partnership today to Tobin and Burbo. Chalk and cheese.
Perfectly acceptable use of the well-known English phrase, chalk and cheese. Scott Burton, though, had some fun with this, Charlie, and imagined the idea that Matt Holland was talking about a strike partnership called chalk and cheese. And he pictured them being Shrewsbury's 1986 promotion chasing big man, little man duo, Gary Cheese and Dave Chalk.
I was going to say Dave Chalk. It's perfect.
I mean, you can have so much fun with this. I imagine it's open to so much interpretation, Charlie, but the fact remains that chalk and cheese would have to be Division 2, old Division 2 maximum.
Little and large.
Yeah. Who's the little and who's the large out of Gary Cheese and Dave Chalk?
I think Chalk's large, isn't he?
Chalk's lanky. Yeah, he's like a stick of chalk. Yeah.
Literally, Dave, absolutely going into his own here.
Sticks of chalk are quite small. I mean, are they...
No, like the long ones you used to get at school.
And then you'd have a little chunk of cheese, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be a lump.
Gary Cheese is the one getting the real... Yeah, I think this is right. Gary Cheese is the 35-goal-a-season man. Dave Chalk chips in with 18, but he's getting the flick-ons, definitely. Yeah. Mm. Dave Chalk. 6'5" Dave Chalk, the beanpole. And Gary Cheese, who had offers to move up the leagues, but he just wanted to stay with Shrewsbury.
Cheezo.
Because he was Shrewsbury through and through, wasn't he, Cheezo? Cheesy, surely.
I think can you have Chalky and Cheesy? I think one has to be an O if one's an E.
Cheezo.
Chalky and Cheesy's fine, aren't you?
Cheezo's been different class today.
Known as the board in the dressing room.
Brilliant, 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 brilliant. Thank you, Scott Burden.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Next up, this basically ended me over Christmas. A tweet from Matt who says, when I was about 13, a friend of mine claimed his dad invented shouting away at corners. Now, two things about this, Dave. Is it cooler to tell this story at school, or is it cooler to actually have a dad who invented shouting away at corners?
Has he provided any evidence for when this was invented?
How could he possibly have done this?
What's the backstory?
Clearly, I mean, I don't know. It's a friend of his from school, so I imagine they've lost contact. But imagine. Surely, Charlie, this guy must have had to offer some more to this story than simply just telling people this. It's a bit like when I used to tell people that I was... about 3 millionth in line to the English throne, and it's because everyone in the country gets a little ticket. Everyone actually gets a number, and loads of people believe me. And they, oh, what's mine? Oh, you just got to go and apply and find out.
there are normally two defences to this kind of claim. One is, well, someone had to say it first. The other is, why would he lie? You know, what's his motivation?
And both that's a good reason. Both why would a dad make this up?
Inarguable logic, but also complete nonsense. I do remember it becoming a bit more prevalent, and always thinking it felt ridiculous because do you need that instruction? Like I'm sure there are reasons and you know whatever, but I always thought, but surely you know you want to hit it away. It's like saying score at someone.
But also put yourself in the mindset of the dad here for a second. If you had to believe that the dad did actually tell his son that he invented this, at what moment did he hear what they just said, son? I came up with that.
I wrote that.
The thing about this, and the reason I'm inclined to believe everybody involved in the telling of this story along the chain, is that it's so innocuous that I can't imagine someone wanting to make it up. It has to have happened. At the very least, Charlie, the dad was under the illusion that he'd created it. That's it.
Yeah, no, I believe that's what happened, yeah. I'm sure, I reckon that's what happened, and it was then relayed, because, you know, especially at a certain age, everyone thinks their parents, you know, you trust your parents implicitly, and I'm sure the dad would have believed this, because he might, maybe he started saying, maybe he was a good player, and he played it at Gay. He used it when he was playing, and then he took it to the terraces, and then it caught on a bit more there. That's sort
took
of
took it to the terraces.
Just about believable. But yeah.
I love the idea, Dave, that there are sort of relatively niche footballing acts out there that have become so mainstream that people don't even pay any attention to them anymore, but that someone must have invented at one point. And like a goalkeeper spinning the ball out to take a free kick in it without the, knowing that the referee won't ask him to place it in an exact position with that sort of confidence.
I mean, exactly. Almost every sort of minor act in the game must have an origin. Is it like, maybe it's like one of those things where, like technology and stuff, do you have, more often than not, surprisingly common that things originate in the military. I can imagine a drill sergeant go, away!
I suppose, it is quite military.
Same with football chants. And I said last year on this podcast that a friend of mine at school claimed he invented Thursday night Channel 5.
What a badge of honour that would be if you could prove it.
But he stands by it. He listened to it and was like, yeah, I did say that. And I did. So, and you know, I guess with all of these chants, there will have been a starting point. It's just
was that the first Tom Hark chant as well? I can't think of one that predates Thursday night's Channel 5. Must be. I mean, it's an
older
song.
That's a good question.
I can't. Yeah, actually, can't think of any other chant that it's used for pre 1998 or anything. So who knows? Next up, this is just like Michael Bolton doing Nessun Dorma. It's like Elton John performing John Lennon's Imagine. One legend unnecessarily covering another legend's anthem. This is Peter Drury does Gary Weaver.
And Grealish has the freedom of Ellen Road, and Grealish has Haaland! Who finally plants his flag into the heart of his native city.
Not particularly happy with this. Charlie, I did feel like he didn't really go for it in the Weaverian way.
Clearly he's referring, as he says, he's referring to the fact that, you know, he was born there and is back there. So there's it makes a little bit more sense in that territorial way. It's not just any team have come and scored against another team.
So not a knowing usage, you don't think?
No, I think it is. I don't think it's necessarily a nod to Weaver. but I think there is that context. He wouldn't have said it about any other player scoring.
Look forward to Gary Weaver's next commentary, Dave, about what he's going to pull out of the bag as the alternative B side to this.
How's your alliteration, Gary?
Tough act to follow. That's all I'm saying. Right, a quiz for you, Charlie Eccleshare. This is a list of names who have been the guest/subject of which programme? Jamie Carragher, Phil Neville, John Barnes, Matt Letizia, Sol Campbell, Paul Scholes, Thierry Henry, Robbie Keane, Ian Wright, Gianfranco Zola, Robbie Fowler, Robert Pires, Michael Owen, Dimitar Berbatov, Wayne Rooney, Alan Shearer, Steven Gerrard, Tony Adams, Peter Schmeichel, Ashley Cole, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, David Ginolar and Roy Keane.
Gary Neville's soccer box.
Oh, superb work. That is outrageous to know. Did I make it too easy, Dave? Maybe I did.
No, I think
about right.
You're just dealing with
a machine.
You're just dealing with galaxy brain Eccleshare when it comes to anything related to the Premier League.
It's outrageous.
From that vintage.
I guess I'm glad in a way that we didn't have to muck about with the suspense of finding out what it was. This is all a big build-up to a tweet from listener Sam, who says it was either darts or Gary Neville's soccer box as the only two realistic options on TV one afternoon earlier this week. It got me thinking, who gets in a pure, hasn't been on it yet, but definitely will one day Gary Neville's soccer box 11? Obviously Vincent Kompany, who else?
Great question.
So, first of all, let's appraise his suggestion. How Gary Neville soccer boxy is Vincent Kompany? He's right up there.
Yeah.
That's a great shout. I mean, they tend to be very, very good players. So, like, that's a big self-selecting element of it. I think you need, not quite, but you need to be borderline Premier League great. I mean, not quite that, but...
Or at least be retired by the looks of it.
Yeah, although I think Rooney may have done it when he was still playing, even if not at the highest level.
It could double up as a Premier League Hall of Fame, with the possible exception of Phil Neville, really. I think everyone else would get in. Yeah.
Yeah, Phil Neville was a slow start. Phil Neville was very... It almost follows the trajectory of Mesut Haaland Dix. Who can we get? It's either someone I know really well or someone that works for us.
Yeah.
Well, that's... Yeah,
he's only in the other room. Should we ask him?
That's the second point. I think not always, but often there might be people who are looking to do more media work or get into the media. So someone like Vincent Kompany is perfect because he is... he is doing that as well. And be vaguely articulate. I think of the sort of main criteria.
Harry Kane's got Gary Neville's soccer box absolutely written all over him, Dave.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think, there's probably... I was going to say there probably is an overlap with the overlap. but then I realised what I was saying. But, yeah, I suppose all of those names are, as you say, they're all sort of mid to late 90s or sort of... They span, I suppose, mid-90s to mid-noughties in terms of their Premier League relevance. So he's now going to have to move on to the next generation. Which might be a little trickier in terms of there are more exotic names now that are maybe harder to get, or their English isn't as good, or they're not as up for it, can't be asked.
Yeah, like, you're not getting Sergio Aguero on Gary Neville's box, put it that way.
Suarez, you know.
Difficult, but you would get Jordan Henderson when he's retired from that Suarez. Mm. Ooh,
but is his game interesting enough to be on Soccer Box? That's the problem. Do they widen it out? I've never actually watched it, by the way. Do they widen it out to like the era they were playing in? So like, they talk about teammates and stuff, or is it just them?
Well, a bit. I mean, it will be focused on them, but what they'll normally do is watch highlights of a game. Often what will be a challenge is often it's games Neville's also played in, or it's his era. Right. So, you know, they might watch a Liverpool United game with Carragher and they'll be talking it down. But within that, they'll be like, oh, and there's X player. Oof, God, he was good, wasn't he? Yeah, he was good. He didn't track back, but what a player. And then they'll do like a kind of, and here are your best goals. And obviously the second half of that with Henderson might be a bit shorter, but they could happily watch a Liverpool United game together with him sort of talking through the intricacies of it.
This is good. The reason I think Harry Kane is doubly good for this, Dave, is that, one, he scores lots of goals, so they'll have plenty of footage to study. And second, he strikes me as someone who will happily talk through the technical elements of any goal he scored at any point in a kind of conversational way. So, and he's increasingly confident in front of the camera, so I can see him doing Soccer Box, you know, at the age of 33 or something.
Yeah, I can definitely see him doing it. I don't know how interesting it would be, to be honest. I think there would be a lot of, you know, I just got the ball in a good position and I just shift it and hit it. Like, the strikers talking about scoring goals is always dull.
I disagree. I think he would take it up a notch, Charlie. I think he would go something like, I always try to look for keepers going one way or the other. Mm. Or, you know, when they took that little step, I always used to look for that. So it's something a little bit more like, here's the secret ingredient to my game.
Yeah, and also Kane, his recall of his goals is amazing. So I don't, because sometimes... You can tell they don't really remember it that well. Whereas I think he would be able to talk through basically every goal and say, and talk, as you say, the kind of, what's the thinking there?
Well, love this, quite frankly. This is from Adam Crafton and a few others, actually. Here's Jesse Marsh on BBC Radio 5 Live appraising referee Simon Hooper after Leeds' goalless draw with Newcastle on New Year's Eve.
I was going to ask slightly tongue-in-cheek who might have the bigger gripe with the referee today, you or Eddie Howe, but there were certain times within the match where you looked very furious with the match officials.
No, I just, you know, there were... I actually thought Hoops did a pretty good job and just managing the savviness of what's happening within the match and seeing what's happening. And, you know, just trying to make little reminders. But, I thought the fourth official also had good dialogue with us, so that was helpful. But, yeah, I thought it was a hard-fought match from both teams and to come away with a point and a clean sheet for us is a major positive.
He was doing so well, Dave. Jesse Marsh, he was assimilating into our culture so well, and then he's called a referee by his nickname. And I'm with Keezy on this.
Yeah,
you know, Hoops. At least in hypothesis, it's not. I'm not allowing it.
Hoops.
Because the real issue here, perhaps, isn't Jesse Marsh's, Charlie. It's the fact that the referee has relayed to one or both managers that he would prefer to be called Hoops.
Well,
that's what it heavily implies.
Do we know that?
Yeah, only implies though. I don't know. That may just be an overfamiliarity on Marsh's.
I don't think he would
Marshy's
call him Hoops
part.
Without precedent. But he wouldn't say Hoops.
But it might be that's because what all his colleagues call him. The fourth official with whom Jesse Marsh had such good dialogue, maybe he calls Simon Hooper Hoops and he just sort of took that on.
Well, I mean, after Mossygate, Dave, Keezy will hate this.
Yeah, but... Like, is Hoops big enough to qualify for Hoops? I don't think I would have been able to name... If you'd asked me to name all the Premier League referees, I don't think I would have named Simon Hooper.
No. But, I mean, if anything, that's probably why he's more humble, So they can call him by that, you know.
I mean, imagine if someone said like Dino or someone when Mike Dean was still reffing. The sort of, given that there were all these conspiracy theories about Mike Dean and, you know, he was such a big name anyway, that honestly would have caused such a stir.
Yeah, it should be Mr. Hooper.
I've meant to tell you guys, that reminds me. I was driving at the time, so I couldn't do anything about it. I drove through Tring.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was an incredible, I was like.
Referees just every corner.
It was amazing. I would have had zero idea where Tring was. Without...
Oh, look, there's Graham Pole.
Yeah, it was like... I was gonna say it to Lizzie, but I was like, she's just not gonna care. Like, what is, it's not even that interesting. But I was just like, wow, I'm in Tring. This is
the sign that welcomes you into Tring, like sort of home of
the thing from Tring. There was no drove past the station. There wasn't like a sort of shrine to Graham Pole or yeah. You're
twinned
entering
with Stockley Park.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're entering Graham Pole country.
Oh God, what a moment. The idea, you didn't know what, you couldn't do anything about it. It's such a great, driving around going, oh, I need to tell them.
Like, I can't take a photo. It's like if you went to Chesterless Street, it's that same sort of deal.
If there was a statue of Graham Pole, obviously the moment you'd want to do it, recreate, would be the three yellow cards in the World Cup. But how, you wouldn't be able to do that in statue form, would you? Really?
You could have three of him. In one statue, is that too much? All doing the individual cards.
Three heads coming out of the statue each. Three hands.
What is the statue of him finding out that he'd done it? Ow.
Just the moment of horror on his face.
Next up, a very pressing question from listener Joey Durso, who says, the word game weeks usually seems very FPL-y, but in this World Cup interrupted season, it is actually useful because the shorthand weeks doesn't make sense like it usually would. For example, Leicester were in the relegation zone a few game weeks ago. Is this allowed? Now, Dave, I'm torn about this because I feel like it is very FPL.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more kind of inclined to use the slightly more awkward phrase of round of fixtures, and which I think does the same job. It is technically the same thing. We should probably use that, shouldn't we? Game weeks, I'm not... Match week? Because that's a Premier League officially used match week, don't they, as a kind of round of fixtures thing. Where do you stand on
this? No, I think they use game weeks because it's all synced up, you know, because the Premier League run the FPL as well. So game week is definitely an FPL thing for the conveniences of, you know, the mechanics of that game. But it has bled into the sort of general language of football, for sure. But I still wouldn't use it. I would never use it out loud or write it down.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's the key, isn't it, Charlie?
Yeah, I remember talking to Michael Cox about this earlier in the year. I can't remember what prompted it.
Conversation, but carry on.
This was scintillating between the two of us. And we were talking about that. And also because in the Champions League, do you remember they used to use match days?
Yeah.
Or maybe they still do, which is a bit weird because it's
they
not
do.
The same day.
Champions League and World Cups and European Championships use match days because then they have this ridiculous phrase where they refer to the press conference the day before the match as day minus one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I sort of think the Champions League usage is okay because unlike the fiddly Premier League or any league calendar really, that where games are thrown around all over the place because of postponements and all sorts of reasons, rescheduling for TV, you know that the Champions League weeks will take place when they're supposed to. So if you say, well, they went to the San Siro and beat them 2-0 back on match day two. And you think, well, that's okay because, you know, it was three games ago in the Champions League cycle. It means something. But in Premier League terms, game week's never going to mean anything to me. I'm never going to need to use it or hear it, Charlie.
No, and I think I can see why there might be a use. And related to this, what I don't like is, I heard a bit of this around Boxing Day and the subsequent game weeks. Or match days, of people saying things like, well, you know, it's his first Premier League goal since November 5th or something. You're like, that's ridiculous. They've barely, like, yes, that's true, but they've barely played. Like, that's like, you know, often you'll hear that between seasons, someone scores in September, it's like, it's his first Premier League goal for 4 months. Like, yeah, but he wasn't playing for two and a half of that.
Yeah. It's a disgrace. It is
so
a disgrace.
I think in that example, the use of game weeks would be useful.
Or you can say they can say three matches a game, can't you?
Serve a purpose. Yeah. But yeah, but that's what I was going to say. Basically, in any circumstance here, you can either use games or weeks. You don't need to join them together.
Feels a bit American to me.
It is,
And that's perhaps why I'm inclined to not like it. This is from Smithy, who was watching QPR versus Sheffield United. And by the way, by stealth, sometime during the World Cup, Sky started using two co-commentators on their championship coverage. How do we feel about this?
in the championship matches, two co-commentators.
Yeah.
I think, personally, I think you only should go, the only time you should do two co-commentators is if it's a derby and you want to reflect both teams, particularly if like your standard co-commentator is Jamie Carragher. So for the Merseyside derby, get an Everton player. Or if it's a final or semi-final, like a big occasion, you don't need to do it if it's just Bristol City against Hull in the middle of the season.
Is it overkill, Charlie, or is it actually quite a nice development? Is it nice to have three voices in the commentary booth, as they often did back in the day? This isn't a newfangled thing. They often had two co-commentators and one would just chip in every now and then.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because you're right. I think because it went away and then it came back again a few years ago. And to Dave's point about the big games, in the semi-final of the World Cup, it must have been the Argentina-Croatia game. Yeah, ITV had both Dixon and McCoist as co-coms. And I thought at the time, like, oh, you know this is a big game when this is happening. I think it can work reasonably well, because sometimes they can sort of lift each other's games a little bit. Maybe because they're both trying to not show off, but there's a bit of competition for insight. You know, it's not just you who's being relied upon.
This particularly was Lee Hendry and Neil Warnock on duty for QPR versus Sheffield United. And as Smithy writes in, this is some textbook co-commentary and proper football man banter combined. It ticks all the boxes. Here, during the game, QPR director of football Les Ferdinand appears in the stands at Loftus Road, and he's wearing a flat cap, by the way.
There's a legend. Whacked a few elbows and a few defenders' cheeks, didn't he, back in the day? Some player he was, Les Ferdinand.
He'd be worth a few quid now, wouldn't he, up front? Not with that cap on, though.
That's a great laugh from Lee Hendry.
It's so good. Used to do those sort of things in his time. What would he be worth today? And then shoehorning in some sort of dress sense chat to imply that his value wouldn't be actually that much, which is a completely awkward way of doing it, Charlie. Overall, brilliant.
The only thing missing, and I thought we were going to get, which you so often get, and I think you got this on the Prime Video's coverage, they showed James Maddison in the crowd and he was wearing quite sort of loud gear, is the, oh, haven't you got one of those at home? I'd like to see how that would look on you. You got one of those for Christmas, did you? So I thought there might be a sort of like, Neil, you're not wearing yours today.
And Neil would have taken that quite well as well, of Warnock, so that would have been quite good. Yeah, but yeah, good start. Good Christmas had by lots of commentators here. Less good Christmas had by my nephew, though. Dave, I bought my nephew the Match of the Day 2023 annual.
Great.
For Christmas. I thought it was a slam dunk of a present. He's getting into football. A simple one, he's about the right age to appreciate it. But the state of football annuals now, it really needs to be brought to the nation's attention. Now, before we get into this specific
The absolute state.
The usual fare that you would have seen in football annuals growing up, it must be a tough job coming up with the content, because this is a weekly content machine, then you're having to just fill an annual thing of stuff. What should be in a football annual? Sort of roundups of the year? Bigger picture stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I don't know if I ever really got an annual when I was a kid. I had all the sticker books and stuff. But like, I'm thinking, could there be like a word search in an annual?
Good, that sort of thing. Quizzes.
Yeah, quizzes
are good.
The year ahead.
Funny
as well,
photos.
To be back in the day, there'd be these are when the big competitions are and what have you.
Players to watch.
Best players in the world was always an easy one.
Yeah.
You'd have sort of six great players.
Lists of stuff that wouldn't be out of date terribly quickly. This, however, is a disgrace. This appears in the Match of the Day annual for 2023. And it's simply entitled, It's Time to Rank Your Rice. Number one, jasmine rice. Number two, rice pudding. Number three, basmati rice. Number four, egg fried rice. Number five is black rice. Number six is simply risotto rice.
What?
Number seven, Declan rice. Number eight, sticky rice. Number nine, Rice Krispies. There are little bits that you can write your number in for their rating, and then in the corner, you can rank your top three rices.
Oh my God, what is going on?
I mean, I was just going to say, as you started doing that, I was like, that was always a staple, the sort of wordplay, punning and stuff. But it wasn't, but it would be, they would all be related to footballers. You wouldn't have all of that stuff.
Here's some food for thought readers, it says underneath as the subtitle, Dave. This is desperate stuff.
Yeah, because
it's not how much I paid for it, but it's too much.
You could use Declan Rice as the starting point and then, like do other 100%. Punny names on on foodie footballers.
Football food. Easy.
Yeah. You could do an entire takeaway selection using players' names. But not just rice. Field a page, though. It filled a page.
But crucially,
who am I to talk about desperate content?
But the acid test is, did your nephew enjoy that page? Has he ranked his rices?
I don't know. I will find out what his top three rices are. Finally, from Michael Rainsbury. He says, the finish is rather scrappy, but he won't care one bit. At what point would a player care if the goal they scored was scrappy? Perhaps if it was a friendly or a consolation goal. And which kind of player would it be? I can think David Ginola would be one of them.
This is another amazing example of our listeners being so in sync with my mind. I had the exact same thought, though my thought was about a team, because I saw this written down. Can't remember who it was. X team have gone ahead. It's a scrappy goal, but they won't care one bit.
Yep.
Why would you care? Why would anyone care? A team, I think, is even more ridiculous. What team, unless the league is so distorted, which, you know, you could argue, what team is going to be like, oh, we're 1-0 up? That was a shit goal. Like, that was a bit scrappy, wasn't it?
Before we tackle this specifically, Dave, let's list all the things that players or teams wouldn't care about. So scrappy goals.
Scrappy goals. I mean, playing badly but winning.
Mm. Yes. But then
it was a poor performance, but they won't care because they got the job done.
In a cup competition, but not in the league. Is that fair? Because they've got through. But in the league, that is, well, they're not.
Depends what
well.
Stage of the league, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
true. Because there are points of the season which it's all about results.
Yeah. Some question marks hover over a certain team despite winning.
A team wouldn't care one bit about benefiting from a bad refereeing decision.
Yeah, they won't care about that.
It's a soft penalty, but they won't care about that.
Fortuitous things that happen to teams, but they won't care about that. But yeah, let's answer Michael Rainsbury's question, Dave. At what point would a player care if the goal they scored was scrappy?
Is there a player, Ginola, that's an interesting shout, who's just, you know, a Bergkamp or someone who was just so renowned for scoring amazing goals that they would look down, I don't really consider that to be a proper goal. Like strikers who don't count penalties. They're not penalties, they're not proper goals, are they? Do you know what I mean? They turn their nose up at the notion of scoring from 2 yards out.
Let's look at it a slightly different way, Charlie. I'm trying to picture a goal that an average elite striker will be quite annoyed at hitting like that. Take this example, a ball being fired across to them and they're like 2 or 3 yards out. The goal is now gaping. The keeper was already committed to his near post. So the goal is open and they go to side foot it in, but it hits their standing foot instead and goes in. And it looks really awkward and it's actually quite embarrassing that they mishit it, but they sort of scuffed it in, bundled it in at the same time. I feel like that might be the point at which they would care that it was a scrappy goal.
Maybe, but they might also just be tinged with relief. I can imagine...
They might laugh it off.
Yeah, a little bit. I can imagine a player who, if you sort of trade off your good finishing, if you have to score a goal where you miss the 1-1, the keeper saves it, it comes back to you and you get the rebound, I think you might care one bit. I think there are some strikers who'd be like, that's a bit annoying because
just one bit.
I should have just scored that and I don't want to be missing that again.
Penalty rebounds, I think, because not only is it an ego blow to have missed the penalty, but it's kind of like, well, that's one off my records, my penalty record, and people would care about that. Harry Kane would care about that.
Yeah, yeah.
There would be an element of relief, but he would care one bit.
That's a really good example. What about, do you think...
Would he have still let his country down? In a way?
Well,
in a way.
In the Euros.
Momentarily.
In the Euros, he did briefly let his country down against Denmark. His penalty was saved, but seconds later, redeemed himself by scoring the rebound.
That's right. What about that
goal Stan Collymore scored against... Was Tim Flowers was the keeper, I think. Yeah, where that bobbled in and Collymore, he celebrated in a... Oh, that's a bit funny, but I don't think he would have cared one bit, really. I don't think you'd have much sympathy. I mean, maybe if England were playing San Marino and that happened, you know, to make it 11-0 against a poor, hapless goalkeeper, maybe there's a player who'd care one bit.
Well, you're introducing sympathy to it now, which I think dilutes it. That's not enough, is it?
It's different.
Anyway, we are done, except for one thing. It's time to say Happy New Year to Keys and Gray.
Ford Super Sunday.
Just one little clip for you, really. Here's Richard Keys on Be In Sports
with his trusty nodding sidekick Andy Gray talking about Chelsea's current plight.
If you're a Chelsea fan, you can't accept that.
I'll be interested to hear what he's got to say tonight again. He'll come out and tell us he thinks Azpi played well, and you know, the various number of different nicknames he throws around, and you know, they're all my mates. Well, I don't think they are.
No, they're not.
And
your
I
mates.
Think that very that's soon now you're going to find that out.
By the way, that's a tough dressing room.
Yeah.
Azpi.
Really should. We should be keeping a kind of compendium, Charlie, of all the things that Keezy thinks is not on. Not things that are just wildly wrong, just things that he thinks only he has identified is wrong to do as a football manager or player.
Again, that's a really strange one because chummy nicknamery feels very the sort of thing he would really like.
You write the book on it.
Yeah.
But, and that does feel like a very good counter-argument. But Dave, I feel like Keezy would employ some sort of kind of probation period by which you don't call someone by their nickname. And then after that, once you've earned their trust, or, you know, they've earned your trust, then the nicknames can flow. He's implying that Potter hasn't been in the job long enough, / isn't a big enough reputation to be start throwing around nicknames of his players already.
Yes.
Seems harsh. Seems harsh.
I think as well, is there a bit of Keezy would let proper football men get away with the chumminess, whereas I don't think he considers Potter to be part of the gang.
He thinks he's a school teacher, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He must hate Potter so much. But I guess maybe as well he would think that it's less becoming for managers to do it with their own players because there should be the level of fear and all of that. Can you imagine Brian Clough calling his players that? Oh.
Yes. I can actually, though. That's the thing.
So can I, yeah.
It's a very slippery moral code there that he's trying to inflict on football. Anyway, a tremendous adjudication panel to kick off the year. Thanks to you, David Walker.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening and for people who contributed, because our cup runneth over for this adjudication panel. So we've saved a few bits for next week. So don't worry, there's still a chance. And we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.
The Athletic.